All of us here at We Are the Mods are very saddened by the news of the sudden passing of Small Faces member Ian MacMcLagan on December 3rd. From his time with the Small Faces to leading his own band, the Bump Band in Austin, MacLagan had tickled the ivories like none other, and he will be greatly missed. War and Peace had the genuine pleasure to talk to Ian MacMcLagan almost a year ago to the day, and he's told me that Ian was genuine, honest, and a joy to talk to. He will be greatly missed. In honor of one of the best men to ever touch a Hammond organ, here is that interview that War and Peace did with Ian MacLagan. The pleasure was all ours, Ian. Rest in peace.
War and Peace back with you on We Are the Mods on Mod Radio UK. Right, the Small Faces. They should need no introduction to any self-declared music nut or mod. They're as synonymous with mod culture as olive green M51s, Lambretta scooters, or even 40-year-old men who still fantasize about throwing pebbles at rockers on the beaches of Brighton. They defined the mod cool of mid-60s Britain and in London in particular, with their striking image, memorable tunes, and Dickensian charm. After signing with Decca in 65, they released a string of smash hit singles and an album that mixed the soul and R&B they adored with a marketable pop sheen ideal for teenagers at the time. It's fair to say that without the Small Faces, Robert Plant wouldn't have sang in that voice, and Weller would have still been wondering what to do with his Barnet. Their keyboard player, Ian MacLagan, in addition to tinkling the ivories, or rather banging on the B3 for the Small Faces and the Faces, has also collaborated with the likes of the Rolling Stones, Ronnie Wood, Billy Bragg, Bob Dylan, John Hyatt, an endless list, as well as leading his own band, the Bump Band, since the early 80s. Better than that, he's my neighbour. An official Texan calling in from Austin, Texas, Mr. Ian MacLagan, a very warm welcome to We Are the Ones, mate.
Thank you, Warren. Bless your heart. It's nice to be chatting with you. What an introduction. I feel like I've just got an Oscar or something. Or did I just die?
I rehearsed that four times before calling you. I didn't want to get it wrong because I got you on the phone, and I'm very excited because I'm a massive fan, and I'm never starstruck. Right. But I'm starstruck, I've got to tell you. But I got to say, how people don't know what they're missing. I'm often ribbed that Texas isn't exactly a bastion of mod culture, right?
And that might be... I think it is, actually.
Right, I think so too, right? So it's musically, it's very, very inspiring. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially Austin is really, it's full of music. You know what I mean? All kinds. And, you know, I played a show last night, and there's always someone from England turns up. Every week I play. And I get the sweetest... People say the sweetest things. Like, for instance, and this happens every week, someone will come up and say, I'm so glad you're here in Austin. Well, that makes me feel so good because I'm real happy to be in Austin. And it's nice to be nice. It's nice to be loved.
I tell you what, mate, they're not quite as nice with me that I'm in Dallas. It's more like I wish you get back to England, Warren. We'll talk about the Bump Band in a minute because I want to get into that because I know you have a regular gig down there at the Lucky Lounge, I believe, down in Austin.
And
we have a live album
out just recently too.
Let's talk about that then. Let's get Austin. I want to talk about that then. So let's get that out of the way first. You moved to Austin back in the 90s.
And 94.
The Bump Band includes some of the city's best players. So who are you playing with down there? What formulates the band?
Well, on guitar, and he's played with me since I moved here in 94, is Scrappy Judd Newcomb. And he is just amazing. He plays with a lot of different people. He has his own records. But he's very simpatico. We play very well together. And then on bass, we have John Notar Thomas, who's originally from Syracuse, and a dear pal, and a great bass player, a great singer, and he also makes his own records. And then there's Conrad Shakroon, who's an amazing drummer. He's been with me only 2 years, but he is fabulous. He's on my next record, which will come out in 2014, called United States.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because I know I've Never Say Never. That was a few years ago. And I know that you have that live album out in 2012, right, which was recorded live at the Lucky Lounge, which I guess is your regular house gig in Austin, yeah?
Actually, it came out this year, 2013.
Oh, I'm sorry. 2013. Yeah. Did you some dates to support that. Is there any more on the cards, any more dates outside of Austin that people can see you in the States?
No, we played last night at the Lucky Lounge. That was our Christmas show because I'm off to the UK for Christmas and the New Year.
Ah, lucky you. Very nice.
Yeah.
See,
it'll be warmer, I hope.
He's laughing. We actually had a nice storm in Dallas. Austin and Dallas, in case you listen to this in another part of the world. They're not too far apart.
No, we've
just had a big ice storm in Dallas. And
had it worse up there, I believe.
We did. It was awful, man. I was stranded in Nashville, which is worst places you can be stranded than Nashville, Tennessee. But I was stranded in Nashville, Tennessee. So I get the advantage of being here. So I can go down and see you and play. I can actually go down to the Lucky Lounge. But that live CD, Live at the Lucky Lounge, released in 2013. Actually, I mean, you get hold of it if you don't have it. Got to listen to it. And you say there's another one coming out soon for next year, yeah?
There's a studio album which we finished last year, and we've been, our manager's been negotiating with different companies, and finally we got, we're signing with a company that I really like, and it'll come out sometime in the late spring, I think, of 2014. And it's called The United States. It has nothing to do with America. It's all about relationships.
Oh, that's it. Would you ever
play on words?
A nice play on words. Would you ever see yourself? Now you've been here since '94, so you've been here roughly as long as I have. Would you ever see yourself settling back in the UK, or are you here for good and happy? And could you ever see yourself going home?
I'm in Austin, and I'm never going to leave. I mean, other than to go on tour. No, I mean, I love it in England, of course. And I got my granddaughter, my son, my brother-in-law and his family, they're all over there, but and lots of friends, but it's too expensive. And anyway, I've lived in America longer than I've ever lived in England. I've lived here 35 years now.
Oh, good Lord.
And, I mean, apart from the fact I'm a citizen, I just like it here, you know. It's I'm used to it. I wouldn't know how to live in London, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've lost it.
Couldn't afford to either.
Yeah, there's that part of it as well. So, look, you've had a massive career as a session and sideman, right? You know, the solo work, despite the accolades and your solo work, you do get associated, I'd probably say, more with the Faces than anything else. Do you have any, you know, is there a preference in your mind between the Small Faces and the Faces material?
No. I mean, they're both bands of brothers, you know.
Yeah.
And it's all good memories, good music. I mean, the Small Faces was very special to me because I was pulled in, you know, and I met these Steve, Ronnie, and Kenny, and just I love them, you know. I love them to this day. Kenny's my dear pal, my brother, you know, and that was a good time. And then the Faces was another good time. And actually, the first time we actually got paid. So I have a fondness for the Faces because we were paid. But, it's all good, you know. It's 2015, 2015 is the Small Faces anniversary.
50 years.
So I'm hoping we're going to get together, me and Kenny and a few other characters, and play a few shows over there.
Do you ever pinch yourself, man? 50 years.
I know, that's crazy.
That's crazy. Would you say, so if Ronnie and Steve was alive, do you reckon that you would have got back together for that 50th anniversary? You reckon that would have happened?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
That would have been on the cards, yeah?
Yeah.
So we have this discussion. This is a mod show. We have this discussion on the show all the time. What was it with your generation particularly? I'm a little younger than you, not much, but I'm a little younger than you. What was it that was growing up in sort of post-war England that resulted in this sort of plethora of outstanding British musicians and singers? It was just like this massive onslaught. What was it about that post-war
moment? It's, as far as I can see it, it's all because of America. Because Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry and Fats Domino and Little Richard and Elvis Presley, they were all making great records, and it only started in like just 1956.
Yeah.
And I was 11 in 56, and I was very impressionable. My brother was 2 years older, and when he turned 13, he had a teenage party, and I was invited. I was the youngest there because they were all his age, you know. And our neighbor two doors away had her birthday party the week before his. So I went to two parties where nothing but rock and roll was played, and I got to meet some very sexy 13-year-old. You know, I was 11. I was actually 10 and a half. And my first kiss, rock and roll, the drugs had to wait, you know. It was all going on. And when you think about it, like, before that, it was all the rubbish, you know, the rubbish from the war. All that sort of big bands, I don't know, just schmaltzy rubbish. And when rock and roll hit, you know, Little Richard Christ almighty, you know, that's sort of, that changed everyone's ears. And so when I got a little older, when I finally got my hands on a guitar, I didn't want to play, you know, Bach or Beethoven, though I love all that stuff now, but it was, I wanted to play Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, I wanted to play Chuck Berry. And so I did. I wasn't the only one. And then when I got into the blues, you know, and I heard Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter and Jimmy Reed, you know, this was another big change. But I was old enough then, I had a piano and a guitar, I could start figuring it out, you know.
I was going to ask
and,
you that.
I'm still figuring it out.
You're still... No, you're being modest, mate. I was going to ask you that because obviously you're a keyboard player and one of the most famous keyboard players and one of the best keyboard players ever. But, I mean, I would imagine your first introduction to rock and roll would have been Jerry Lee. That was my assumption, you know.
Well, I had piano lessons for a short time. I hated them. My mother wanted me to play the piano. I didn't. And so I would play hooky.
Thank you, Mum.
In fact... Pardon?
Thank you, Mum. You must be saying that, right?
Well, no, I mean, it didn't help me because I hated the piano. I hated what I was being taught, you know. I was being taught scales. I still don't know my basic scales. I know how to play the piano because I figured it out myself, but it was completely alien to me. And me and two mates from school, Alan, we used to wear these checkered caps. We were in Gene Vincent. And we used to play snooker wearing these caps. We thought, that's the blue caps, we're the checkered caps.
Who was that? I was a big Gene Vincent fan. That what was his name? I'm trying to think of the name of the guitar player. I was just I can't think of his name.
There's a great photograph of him in Capitol Records in Los Angeles from that studio. And it's brilliant. Gene's in the front, and they're all like, standing behind him to the side, and it's just a fantastic shot. He's got a big hole in his guitar, too.
I've actually got that framed in my bathroom, and that's not a joke. I know
that's
the
a
shot.
Beautiful shot, isn't
I'm
it?
A big Gene fan, yeah, absolutely. It's embarrassing. I can't think of the name of the keyboard player, the guitar player right now. I know Jeff Beck did the album and sort of as a tribute.
Yeah, I can't think for a second.
It's terrible. So let me ask you, back in the 60s, the Beatles represented, you know, I guess the collective youth of the world. What made the Small Faces interesting? I think particularly in the States, and I'm talking from an American perspective, although the show's going all over the world, I'm just talking from an American perspective, you were the group's most identifiable with the mods, right? And let's face it, the people in the States back then, they didn't know about what was going on in the beaches of Clacton and Hastings and Brighton back then. To them, the right. Beatles sort of were mods. You were mods. Consequently, you were placed in a position of being sort of spokesman for the subculture. We've had this debate on the show. And if you don't mind, I'll call you Mac. Because we're neighbours in Texas.
Mate.
All right, mate. We're neighbours. In your opinion, were the Small Faces a mod band, or were you a bunch of mods who happened to be in a band? That we have that debate all the time. What's your opinion on that?
That's the truth of it. Steve, Ronnie, Kenny, and Jimmy were mods before. You know what I mean? That was what they were, and they happened to pick up instruments, you know?
Right.
I was at art school, and I had no money. And the only, but the band I was in, the Muleskinners, the only clothes we bought, the smartest clothes I had were the jackets, the band jackets we bought in Carnaby Street. So we looked mod, in a way, because we were wearing the clothes, but, you know, mods were more dedicated to clothes than I could be because I had to buy paint. and paintbrushes and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a very small grant, but at least we had, you know, jackets, pants, shirts, and shoes all from Carnaby Street. So we looked the part, but, you know, Steve, Ronnie, Kenny were mods, you know.
Yeah, they lived.
But I mean, when I joined that November the 1st, 65, the very next day, we went down Carnaby Street and I was allowed to just pillage, you know. Just help myself everywhere to clothes because I had to look as smart as them characters, you know, and they were togged up.
No, I'm actually sitting here, I'm a little bit jaw-dropped because actually November the 1st is my birthday, and it wasn't too far away from 65, actually, so fortunately on this end of 65.
What year were you born?
I can't tell you that on the air, everybody's listening. I'll tell 66, but I'll cut that out. So
I was in the band a whole year before you turned up.
You actually were, I know. So let me ask you about this. So this is what I'm really excited about, and I've dying to sort of get hold of this. The forthcoming Here Is the Nice box set features all of the Small Faces' timeless immediate hit singles, A and B sides, EP tracks in their original mono single mixes, plenty of live and alternative versions, plus a plethora of really rare, from what I can see, and unreleased material, including unheard recording sessions from Olympic, Trident, IBC. I mean, it's the lot. It's hitting the streets.
It's an absolutely beautiful job. I am gobsmacked. It arrived a couple of days ago. I have a copy in front of me, and I'm only maybe a quarter of the way through the book. The book is unbelievable, the information. And it's so beautifully put together. There's photographs. I'm looking at photographs of Olympic studios from the outside. And just information there is great, and the sounds are amazing.
So
Rob Cager has done a fantastic job.
Speaking about that book, you've got it's a book with a list of artists who contributed to that is amazing to me. I'm just reading this, actually, off of the press release.
Right.
Robert Plant, Paul Weller, Dave Bowie, Nick Mason, Peter Frampton, Chris Robertson of the Black Crowes, Glenn Matlock, Chad Smith, Paul Stanley of Kiss, to name a few. This the influence that you guys had on the music industry as a whole. I mean, it's amazing how a group of young mods from London, you know, when you look back, we're able to influence such a wide array of talent. But that book's amazing. This is available on a pre-order right now. It's an exclusive to Amazon. So if you get on Amazon right now, you can pre-order this box set.
Worth every penny, I tell you. I know it's not cheap. I believe it's something like $150, but I might be wrong. Somebody told me last night at the gig. But it's a beautiful
worth every
job.
Penny, mate. I'm telling you, I'm flabbergasted with it. We will have this link up now as this show airs. If you go to our Facebook site, anybody listening, which is facebook.com/mods. It's the largest Facebook community on the internet right now. We have that link up so you can pre-order on Amazon. I've got to ask you, though, you and Kenny both curated and supervised this whole project, which is astounding. What was it like to sit down and go through all those old records and organize this?
Well, actually, we didn't. I didn't. I wasn't over there, but I went over there on a visit last October, I think it was, you know, a year ago, and met up with Kenny at the studio in North London and sat there for some hours listening to the stuff that Rob Cager thought we would need to listen to. And it's just the sound, for a start. You know, we were just amazed at how great it sounds, because a lot of our records have come out in, you know, CDs in recent years, well, in the last 30 years or so. They've come from record, or sometimes from cassette.
Ugh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't have the masters. Well, Rob Cager scoured the world almost literally. I mean, he went all around America, all around Europe, and found, like, we never had a deal with Sony, but Sony had bought up CBS. We were signed to Immediate in America was signed to CBS. So some of our tapes, stereo masters, turned up in Sony's vault, which were better than anything else that they've been making our records from all these years. So we've got better sources. And Rob found the occasional, you know, 8-track. So he was able to remix and remaster, and finally we're getting some really good quality, because we really suffered from it. A, we were never paid, but forgetting that, a lot of the masters were thrown out of Olympic. The company that took over Olympic had put a skip outside and filled it with the tapes. So they apparently notified, but it's all written, it's all in the book.
Yeah,
actually Rob Cager really tells the story well. I was fascinated to read it too. But he said, you know, they called some of the record companies, but of course, we're not in contact with the record company. Decca, they don't exist anymore.
Right.
All there are accountants and lawyers generally in record company offices, and they have no love for music, no understanding of it. And they were, someone from the owners of Olympic called up a few record companies and said that these tapes are going to get sewn in the skip if they're not picked up by Friday or something. And they just threw him. Townsend was driving past and saw these things. Apparently, I believe he saved some Jimi Hendrix 8-tracks from being thrown. You know, just completely destroyed. It's pathetic.
Where is the mentality, you know, that the human beings do that? Like, we knocked down the cavern in Liverpool, right? I mean, he's
right,
like,
and rebuilt it. Yeah,
and rebuilt it. You know, it's like we
same with Stax. Stax Studios.
Yes, same with Stax, man. It's just like, I can't get my head around it. It's just amazing. And it's glad you touched on something back there, and I'm glad you actually mentioned it, because I think CDs have really done And it's not like I've got a retro fetish. It's not like I just listen to vinyl. But, I mean, CDs, I think, really did a lot of bands like not just you guys, but everybody did a disservice. Like, listen to the Beatles CDs, they're crap. I don't know what they got them from. I'm glad you actually said that you got some of your... It's lovely and vindicating, I think, to have it all, you know, the original recordings, get them remastered and get them out in something like this where they really sound like they should. And that's what the fans want, man. And I thank you as a Small Faces fan, and my co-host Graham is a massive Small Faces fan. I mean, from us, from the bottom of our hearts, and everybody listening, we really thank you for doing that for us.
That's very kind. Rob Cager should take all the credit. I'm just sitting here loving it all, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful to him.
Yeah, thanks to Rob. There's no doubt about it. Any personal faves of yours now you've given it a listen?
Well, I haven't heard all of it. I haven't even read. You know, I've only heard. What I heard in the studio is still sitting here in its box because I'm in the middle of... I played 3 shows in the last 4 or 5 days, so I'm kind of... I'm a little bit gig shocked.
Well, mine's on the way, so I can't wait. I pre-ordered it, I can't wait. I mean, I've... You know, I heard a couple of tracks that were sent to me, and words aren't enough for it. I was just absolutely freaking flabbergasted. Listen, it's been a pleasure, mate. I'll be heading down to the Lucky Lounge in Austin
I'll be back in January. I'm not sure exactly when, but I look forward to come up and say hi.
It's a date then. I'm going to come in January once the holidays are over. We'll get those out of the way, right? I'll try and lose a bit of weight after I stuff my face, after Christmas, and I'll come down and see you. And I look forward to it. It's been an absolute pleasure, Matt.
Thank you, Rick. We'll actually be playing on the 9th.
9th of what? January? 9th of January at the Lucky Lounge in Austin.
It's a free show, $20 to get out.
This is War and Peace. So you're listening to We Are the Mods on Mod Radio UK. That was Ian McLaglen. Back to the music.
Steve again.